You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. And remember, to include the name The Scoreless Thriller Podcast in your application. Thank you.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
It's a fucking disgrace.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was. Carlos Alberto.
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maldano. Houghton.
Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp! Die neemt de bal feilloos aan! En hij schiet de bal erin!
Hallo en welkom to the Scoreless Thriller Podcast. I'm your host, Alex. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Leon. Leon, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. What was the pause about?
What was the pause about?
Yeah.
I was trying to remember.
Such a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. Okay,
good to be back.
We've got a full house on the podcast today, so we've got four in total. We're joined by Rob again. Rob, how are you doing?
Hello. Yes, I'm doing good. Happy to be back on the podcast.
And joining us to make his debut, we have the Scottish Alex. I don't know whether we're going to, when we pass it around, whether we're going to have to use Scottish Alex as our names, but we'll work it away.
Yeah, quite happy to be Scottish Alex. I think that will work. Yep.
I think the audience can tell who's the Scottish one.
I mean, they should be
fine.
Well, I should tell you, Alex, that in order to prepare for this podcast, Leon watched Trainspotting in order to understand your understand your accent better. But yeah, so today on the podcast we wanted to cover England versus Scotland from Euro 1996, and I wanted to cover it for a couple of reasons. I think first one, obviously, we're speaking a week or two after Scotland qualified for its first tournament since the World Cup in 1998, and in the Euros next summer, in Euro 2020, which will take place in the summer of 2021, Scotland will be playing England at Wembley again, which I guess you're pretty excited about.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm glad you brought me on here to really burst my bubble. Our first competition in, what was it, 22 years? It's going to be 23 years, and yeah, We're really riding on that wave, but to watch a Scotland defeat at Wembley back in the 90s for a game that I was, I think, 1 year old at the time was, very humbling and really brought me back down to earth. So
yeah, I really noticed it when I messaged you because you were, like, initially quite enthusiastic. Like, oh, yeah, sure, I'd love to come on the podcast. What are we covering? Oh, yeah, Scotland, England, 1996.
Yes. So good. Happy to be your token Scot.
Happy to be the token Scot. But to introduce yourself a little bit further, I always ask people, like, what is your favourite match that you've ever watched? And also, from your childhood, can you remember a player or something that was kind of quite important to you? And
yeah, I think you're actually more specific in your question. And you asked me who my favourite player was when I was 10 years old. So this
Yeah,
was...
I don't give a shit who was your favourite player when you were 9 or 11.
Yeah, well, I really looked into that. So I think at the time, I would have been around 2004, 2005. And I would have been watching some Scottish football on TV. Mostly it would be the Old Firm. And I don't really have a preference in the Old Firm, although at the time I was kind of favouring Rangers. So we kind of missed out on, around that time, you know, players like Ronald de Boer at Rangers, and I remember Caniggia as well.
Yeah, and Toriandre Flo as well.
Yeah, Flo at Rangers.
Both their transfer records.
Uh-huh, yeah, so all these players I remember growing up and, yeah, just kind of idolising. I think around 2005 we also had Peter Løvenkrantz, Danish footballer.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I actually spotted him at the airport when I was flying back last time.
Ah,
yep.
How did you know it was him?
It was quite difficult. Like, he
how
had a mask.
Was it, like, in his mid-40s or something?
Yeah, he had his mask on, but I could tell it was him. Just and he's got a bit of a Glaswegian accent from his time in Glasgow.
Oh, you just heard him be like...
Yeah, he was at security and... I know that voice.
Oh, okay. And then for your favourite match, what would you say?
Yeah, it's a bit of a left field choice. Having not experienced Scotland at a major tournament, I had to, you know, go for another... live that experience through another country. So I've gone for Portugal versus Spain in 2018 at the World Cup.
Mm.
It ended 3-3. And I think it was just a game that had everything, except for my red card. You have Ronaldo getting his hat trick, with getting a last minute free kick, or like 88th minute free kick equaliser. You've got Diego Costa absolutely destroying Pepe to get an equaliser.
The typical De Gea, which is.
Of course. Nacho gives away a penalty early on and then goes on to score a wonder goal. And yeah, I think it was just really reminding me why, like, I love football even as a neutral. So.
Yeah. I think that was, like, quite early on. I think it was, like, the first round of that, like, that World Cup, right? And
yeah,
I think we're watching this. Okay, now the World Cup is kind of properly started. Cool. But that's a great choice. So before we go into sort of discussing this iconic game, I prepared a bit of a quiz. The quiz, it's a bit... I don't know how... I mean, expecting you to do pretty well, Alex, because also whenever I've spoken to you about the podcast, since you've always been pretty frustrated about the contestants' inability to answer.
It tells me. Sitting there in silence, knowing the answer.
So this quiz is kind of...
This was somewhat directed towards me.
No, it was guests in general.
Okay. Well, I was like the constant in this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there was always an Adam, but then it was always me playing my part. I'm sorry, Alex.
It was the All Blacks, the All Blacks question that really got me.
Mm.
A football nation, or a football team known for their uniforms, I think it was.
Yeah, he was like the unbeaten team from the 2010 World Cup, right? And they got knocked out because they drew. And Colvin said, is it a team which is known for their uniform? And I said, like, yeah, obviously it is. But then he kind of left that alone and then went...
You're missing an important element, and also known for being... you know, very good at another sport.
Yeah, I said that too. And then you went on and talked, you and him went on talking about, like, running through other ideas for, like, a few minutes, and then you eventually went back to the New Zealand thing. But I think when I edited this podcast, I may have cut out the few minutes where you went through, like, running through everything, so then it's like...
But we guessed it correctly at the end.
Yeah, eventually.
Well, fair enough.
Well, you led to that answer. That's all that means.
Doesn't matter how you get there, it's just so long as you get there, that's all that matters. Okay, so these questions are all about sort of Scottish football, and they're all sort of like about stories from Scottish football from like recent years and stuff. So they're a bit kind of odd, these questions, I guess.
Wish you could see the expression on Rod's face.
Yeah, Rob looks so nervous. Don't get nervous, Rob.
I'm hopeless. I'm going to try my best. Is it multiple choice?
They're always multiple choice, Rob.
Thank goodness. Yes.
All right, let's crack on. Okay, 10 questions. Question number one. In 2019, Dundee FC played a game versus 100 kids. What was the final score? What? A. 14-1 to the kids. B. 5-0 to Dundee. C. 9-0 to Dundee. Or D. 9-8 to the kids.
I've seen footage of some game like this. I can't remember if it was this exact game. You know, where there's like a
Real Madrid started this trend. I think they played 100 kids, like three players against 100 kids in Japan, and then like it got copied by
What was the last option?
9-8 to the kids. A 17-goal thriller.
Because I remember when I would play like older players, they would kind of try to keep it close so that we wouldn't lose motivation. So quite naturally, you go for like a close scoring, right? And that's what you want. So.
Yeah, I remember when I was very small and I played against my kid. Not my kid, sorry.
Big reveal. on the buzz. This goes out to Alexis.
Yeah, I remember when I played it. I'm done with that kid now. Okay, so rephrase that. When I played with my dad, I used to get super pissed off and annoyed when it was very clear that he was letting me win. Okay. Like, because you have to like play the back, like the fine line between like actually trying, but also it being like close.
Yeah. So.
But anyway, what choice are you going to?
I think the Dundee players will be happy to get any win they can get. So it's a boost, win percentage. I think the players took the win.
So 5-0 or 9-0 to Dundee?
I think 5-0.
5-0 to Dundee.
It's a complete guess, but...
Okay, fine.
No goal for the kids.
There's no way they're going to have gone out fucking, like, crying, like, we couldn't even get a shot.
I'm so embarrassed, Dad. I lost the Dundee.
Some kind of marketing event, right? Or at least, like, PR event.
Okay.
So they're bound to let them score, like, at least once.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for redirecting me to that. So I'll change to the... What was it, the 9-8?
Yeah, I fancy that one.
Okay. Yeah, I like that one. Yeah.
Okay, I can tell you that you are wrong. The correct answer was A, 14-1 to the kids.
Wow.
Okay.
Are they that bad?
So how many Dundee players was it?
It was a full team.
That's like 10 kids on one player.
Yeah.
Roughly. You can do that.
What age were these?
It's quite funny because when I was researching this story... for some reason, I think there was like a summer where all the Scottish clubs were doing the same thing, where they played 100 kids for charity or something. And the manager of one of the other clubs, I can't remember which it was, like maybe Patrick Thistle or something, they lost the kids, and he was doing it, but he did like a post-match interview, but he did a very like straight face, and he was just like, I can't believe we let like 33 of them, you know, open in the middle of the box to score. All right, question number two. Hibs striker Jason Cummings, known as Cum Dog, was banned from McDonald's in 2015 for doing what? A. Sneaking some cans of beer in for a drink with his Big Mac. B. Throwing up on a toddler. C. Throwing McMuffins at staff. Or D. Refusing to back down after being told that the McFlurry machine was out of order.
I mean, D does sound realistic. That it would be out of order.
It would be a really upsetting thing to happen to a person as well.
But then again, there's nothing you can really do about it, right? That's just
But if you come to McDonald's for McFlurry,
it just sucks, but just suck it up and get on with your life. I think maybe he threw stuff.
Oh, I hope not. I'd like the idea of sneaking in some cans. I like that idea in any place. So I think I'd root for that option.
Yeah, that'd be the most honourable option of
season, I think, right? So.
Usually it's the most ridiculous option.
He doesn't go with the obvious ones, yeah. Yeah, and the sneaking cans in does feel like a...
It's a petty crime, but, I mean, is it quiz worthy?
Okay, so D is as in McFlurry.
McFlurry rage.
Are you going for McFlurry rage?
Yes.
Okay, I can tell you that you're incorrect. The correct answer was C, throwing McMuffins at staff.
Oh, no.
That's what I wanted to go for.
Yeah, that's true.
Question number three. Jason Cummings, again, was ridiculed on social media for taking which item on a trip to Wales? A. A travel adapter.
McMuffins.
B. A 12-pack of Iron Brew. C. An English-Welsh dictionary. Or D. A Proclaimers karaoke machine.
Oh no, it can't be that.
Right. Oh no, how have I not heard of this before?
Let's really just try and get into the mind of the cum dog.
I'm thinking travel adapter.
Okay, yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. What was that? So it's travel adapter, Iron Brew, Proclaimers karaoke, and what was the
dictionary.
Other?
Dictionary.
English Welsh
dictionary.
Yeah, I think either dictionary or travel adapter. I think.
You would say it with more enthusiasm.
Yeah. I think.
Say it with dictionary. Your chest.
You think dictionary?
That's just like a little bit of a, you know, thing you might take along with you.
Yeah, well, you whatever know. You want to say. I feel like it's
might
want
to try out
now.
Speaking some Welsh. No, I'm not sure about this one. We clearly don't know Cummings too well, right?
I don't know. Do people use physical, you know, translation? Right,
maybe the gum dog.
When was this? 2015. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
No, no way.
Yeah. Do they even make them anymore?
You just need stuff to throw around every now and then. Just like heavy physical objects.
What's your final answer, please?
Come on, guys. Let's.
I think it's the adapter.
Okay, it's the adapter.
Yeah, we'll go for that.
I can tell you that you have your first correct answer. It is a travel adapter.
Ooh. What a stressful birth of the first one. How do you say it? Anyways.
2-1 to me going into question number four. After Scotland beat England the year after England won the World Cup, the Scots declare themselves unofficial world champions. According to this criteria, who is the current world champions? So like you become the world champion by beating the previous team, which is like...
Oof, yeah.
So Scotland had the title in 1967, then whoever beat them became... So it's like a WWE belt.
Oh yeah.
Right.
A. Macedonia. B. England. C. Netherlands. Or D. Italy.
But were they the first to beat England?
After they'd won the World Cup.
Yeah. The first.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could be any of them, right?
It really could, yeah.
Could it be Macedonia?
Yeah, I'm thinking that's...
Could even be
Alex
Macedonia.
Is wanting us to completely dismiss that off the bat.
Fair enough. Macedonia. It's so irritating.
Well, I think Scotland held this title for quite a while, so I mean if Scotland could to hold it, like they could hold it, then I think anyone could. So
Whether they have to win one match.
Yeah. That is true.
American Samoa would maybe struggle with this. But yeah. Rod, this time you go first.
So let me just figure this out. So a team beat Scotland.
Yeah.
But
and then they became
the question was like present day.
Yeah, who is the current?
So either it can't be Macedonia because like surely they've lost a game since I don't even know if they did beat Scotland. But if they did, then probably since
I mean, it'd be pretty impressive if Scotland didn't lose a game for 50 years.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's going to be when it is going to be one of
the
expected sides there. What was it? Italy, Netherlands, and
England.
Oh, well, let's just dismiss England.
Let's just pick England so it comes full circle.
Yeah,
it's like starting with them losing and then they win it and then that's back in their hands.
Well.
Is England your final answer?
No, wait. Well,
what about Netherlands and Italy?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's one of these two. So, Netherlands or Italy, guys?
Yeah, right. I would go with Italy. Just because not so long ago, Netherlands didn't do so well, didn't qualify.
Of these two and then run with it.
I'm going to go with Italy.
Okay, we go with Italy.
I can tell you that you have leveled up the quiz.
Yes.
It is Italy. Yes. You're the current unofficial world champions. Question number five. Which song knocked Three Lines on a Shirt, Jewels Remain Still Gleaming off the top
Give
of the charts?
Give us some more, please.
one more line.
One more song.
Okay, but I have to do the answers now.
Okay.
Was it A, Mark Morrison, Return of the Mac? It's Return of the Mac.
Oh, yeah, big tune.
Return of the Mac. Yeah. Was it B, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Deep Blue Something? And I said, what about Breakfast at Tiffany's? Was it C, Killing Me Softly by the Fugees? Killing me softly with this song. Mm. Killing me softly.
I think they all track with 96.
Or was it D, Wannabe by the Spice Girls? If you want to be my lover, you're going to get with my friends.
Right, got to dig deep now for Spice Girls knowledge. I reckon they were, because that was their breakout song.
Would you like to hear the options again?
No. Please, no. Please, no.
Quite hear them acoustically. Can you please, a little louder?
Sorry, listeners, I'm worried about copyright loss.
Okay.
Do you know all the words to the Three Lines?
No. I had the lyrics wrong for years as well. So in what's the actual lyrics for the chorus, right?
Is this how you're trying to trick me into singing the whole song?
Remind me again.
It's coming home. It's coming home.
Alright, you don't have to do that.
It's coming. Oh, it's coming.
I'm sorry. Wow,
very sophisticated.
Was it this?
Can you get wrong about those lyrics?
No, I know. I thought it was.
Wait, what's coming home?
We may have to remove this anecdote. It's not very strong.
Please tell me what you. Where's the difficulty of the lyrics?
Is no, oh, I knew it's coming home.
Remind me again.
Just imagine you in the stadium miming the words, not quite getting it, out of time. It's coming.
Where's it coming?
It's coming home, alright? It's coming home.
But which section of the song did you not?
I can't remember the right lyrics now, so this is a bit. I used to think it was Jewels Remain Still Gleaming. But it's not, is it? It's the name.
Jewels Remain Still Gleaming.
Yes, and that's the name of the cup, right? Is that right?
Yeah, the original World Cup.
Yeah. But you guys already knew that, apparently. So
they've gone quiet. Oh,
maybe I've just.
Just loving the banter.
Yeah.
Okay. Alright, so which one is it?
Oh, I've completely forgotten all the options.
Okay, I'll go back. So was it A, Return of the Mac? It's the Return of the Mac. B, Breakfast at Tiffany's. And I said, what about Breakfast at Tiffany's? C, Killing Me Softly by the Fugees. Killing me softly with this song. Killing me softly. Or D, Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
Yeah, it could be any of them. I don't. Were the Spice Girls earlier than 96? I'm now not sure. Maybe they were. Maybe that was the right kind of time. And they always got number one.
Yeah, I think that's the same option.
So I think I'd go with, yeah.
Just also for the interpretation of Alex.
Yeah, if we get it right,
I thought you were going to start singing with me.
If we get it right, can you sing the entire song?
I just a little bit louder, to be honest. Like, okay. That'd be lovely. But okay, let's go with Spice Girls then.
Okay, I can tell you that you are wrong. The correct answer was C, Killing Me Softly.
Oh no, I never have got that.
Good song though.
Yeah,
very
the best song. I think in that list.
Okay, so our scores are 3-2 to me at halftime. Going on to question number 6. In 2016, Ross County had issues selling tickets before their upcoming fixture against Celtic. What was the cause of the problems? A. Vandals had broken into the stadium and stolen half of the seats. B. They had accidentally deleted their club website. C. A clerical error meant that tickets were being sold for $199.99 rather than $19.99. Or D, a local celebrity Elvis impersonator was having a big birthday party on the same day.
Definitely that one.
Yeah, it's got to be
definitely that one.
You can't make that up.
No, it has to be that one.
Rob,
well, are we in complete agreement?
Yeah.
The other one was the bad price or the website being. When I heard the website one, I thought, yeah, that sounds believable.
We're not going for...
But that was before I heard about Elvis. Yeah. So I don't need to hear anymore.
Yeah. No, let's go for a blitz round. This is okay. The last one.
Okay, so you've gone for D. I can tell you that you're incorrect.
Oh,
the correct answer was B, the club deleting their club website.
How did you come up with the last one? Did you
throw me off with Elvis?
Just like, man. I need something. All right. Question. So that's 4-2 to me. Question number 7. In a prank, what did English maverick Paul Gascoigne, whilst playing for Rangers, hide in his teammate Gordon Dury's car?
It's a fish.
Was it A, two fish? Was it B, a stuffed teddy bear which sang God Save the Queen? Was it C, a live tiger? Or was it D, a bee's nest?
Oh, we know.
Yeah, it's the fish. I've heard the story, so...
Okay. Tell us the story.
Okay, so the correct answer is two fish. Do you want to tell us the anecdote or do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, when Gascoigne was up playing for Rangers, he was really into his fishing, apparently. And I think it was him and McCoist had played this prank. And they'd hidden it in... whose car was it? It was
Gordon Dury.
Yeah. They'd managed to get into his car at the training ground and put a fish in the boot. Mm-hmm. I think the important detail is that there was two fish, because when he eventually found the fish that was stinking out his car, he'd think he'd got it, but there was this second fish that would be hidden in the car.
So it shows the a brilliant sort of criminal mind. So that when he found the first fish and he thought the smell would go, but then he was driving around for another month, I was like, okay, my car still stinks of fish, where is it? Because they'd hid the second one in a much harder place to find. Brings our scores now to 5-2 to me. You can still draw.
5-2? We only got two right? No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've had more than two. That must be three.
Oh no, sorry, you got that one right.
I bet this happens every week. I bet this actually happens every week.
Oh. See, he just fiddling with the scores.
Yeah,
all the beer so that I won't notice, and then he tricks me into losing.
We'll cut all this section.
No.
Yeah, I bet. Yep. Censored.
So that brings our scores to 4-3. Question number 8. What was unusual about the signings of Michael Dunlop and Ross Dunlop by Stenhouse Moore in May 2017? A, neither player turned out to exist. B, the signing was announced and completed in a local McDonald's. B, although brothers, they weren't on speaking terms due to a grudge held since childhood over a stolen Mars bar. Or D, they were both goalkeepers.
Would you really have a grudge that went on that long over a stolen Mars bar? I think that's the question.
But then maybe just a narrative, right? It's a story that they go run with. Probably it's different, but then they say it started.
Okay, yeah, true. It's a very specific story as well.
Yeah.
It's quite an elaborate lie, if you have made this one.
He made up the Elvis stuff too, so he was...
He's very imaginative.
Juices flowing. I'd love it if they just don't exist. Imagine signing two people that don't exist. That'd be glorious. But in my head, I'm trying to make it work. How would this go about?
There's no way.
Unless they got their names wrong.
Yeah, would that count as them? I suppose it would, technically.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go with that. You hear these stories of clubs signing the wrong player.
Yeah, George Wes' cousin.
But then do you say, okay, they signed a player that doesn't exist, or they signed
tricked.
Yeah. I think these are two different things, right? A misspelling of a name.
It's
not like a ghost that you hire.
You think? Yeah. Let's go goalkeepers.
Yeah, goalkeepers has got to be.
I can tell you that you are wrong, and the correct answer was that the signing was completed and announced by the local McDonald's. Question number 9. Shettleston Junior's goalkeeper Gary White was bizarrely sent off in a game against Shots Bon Accord. What did he do? A, he went for a pee behind the goal. B, lit a cigarette just before a corner. C, headbutted a dog that had run onto the pitch. or D, pulled the referee's shorts down.
Right, logistically, how do you headbutt a dog?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. How? Yeah,
I don't see that happening.
No. Right. Let's discount that one.
Then again, there are some
if
crazy,
he's on all fours as well.
There are some crazy people out there. If you try hard enough.
I think so. I can't
okay,
see
then
it.
Then cigarette butts. Like, you know, maybe someone threw a cigarette.
We said that about the McDonald's one in the last question, though.
Okay, piss behind the goalpost. I mean, if you really have to pee, right? Like, what do you do as a goalie? Just like, can't run off the pitch, can you?
Just pee in your shorts. Okay. Take a shit on the pitch like Gary Lineker.
Guess that's not for everyone. Some people like to keep it a bit more, you know, personal, private, behind the goalposts. Okay, so not that one then.
Then what's left?
Yeah, what's the one that's left?
There's a cigarette just before a corner. Yeah. Pulled the referee's shorts down or headbutted a dog.
Shorts.
I really want it to be the referee's shorts.
Yeah, shorts.
The referee shorts. Okay, I mean, we both lost anyways. Might just
you could still draw.
Go with the most satisfying answer then.
Okay, I can tell you that you are wrong, and the correct answer was A. He went for a pee behind the goal.
You threw us off.
Yeah.
How did I throw you off?
Because you said he might as well just go inside. I thought you were rooting for us. I thought this was like for me to navigate
this
into the different
empire.
Water. Okay.
I spend all week at work.
Yeah. Masterminding this quiz.
Masterminding my victory. Okay. The last question.
Oh, okay.
In 2015, season ticket holders at Celtic Park received a strange email requesting what? A. That fans stopped stealing balls hit into the stands as it was costing the club too much money. B. A message from Scottish referee Bobby Madden's mum asking them to stop abusing him for being bald. C. A message
so
from
specific.
C. A message from the club encouraging fans to wash before coming to the games as there have been complaints over the smell of body odour in the stand. Or D. Message from the club encouraging patrons to use the bathrooms rather than going to the toilet in the stands.
Oh, I don't think it's the Bobby Madden.
No.
It's mother writing in. Although he is bald.
Okay, so the story checks out.
Yeah, it does.
Were you feeling very self-conscious about it though?
Have you seen the clip recently where there's the camera following the game and it was like they were filming the game, and I think it was like it's programmed to follow the ball, but it just keeps going over to the linesman because he's bald. I can't remember which league it was, but it's quite funny.
Okay.
We love all our listeners, including the bald ones, maybe especially the bald ones. Alright,
so when was this?
2015.
Okay, I really don't think people were peeing in the stands in 2015. Do you know what I mean?
Well, why would they do this in like 1980?
That's a very good point.
Where do you draw the line? Like historically, people stopped peeing
in the 80s. Public urination was way more popular.
That's so random.
Everyone was doing it. Yeah, I don't know why. I just think any time period in the last century or so. I think maybe. I think we could assume that that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, probably also in the Colosseum in Roman times. Don't know whether.
Do you think they peed in the stands in the Colosseum?
They did.
Do you think they did? I don't know.
No, I don't think they did. I think that it's a rule that goes way back. I don't know.
What? Don't pee in the stands?
Don't pee while you're in public, standing next to people cheering on their favourite gladiator. I don't know. Sorry, this is kind of off track. Yeah. So focus,
save
guys. Focus. This is
save
our
it
last
the
chance. Come on, channel your cognitive abilities. Make this work. We want to win on a high note. End this on a high note.
I think it's the first one about the balls getting stolen.
Balls getting
stolen.
If you watch
Scottish
football, it's very common.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to go with that.
Okay. Kind of not. Not my favourite answer though, but yeah, okay.
What would have been your favourite answer?
No,
that means we're wrong.
Huh?
No, in a hypothetical, like, what would you have been?
Was bald, peeing, and?
Washing?
Washing, yeah, the washing one. That would have been my favourite answer.
Okay.
Okay.
I can tell you that you are wrong, and the correct answer was C, the washing.
Oh. No!
Come with on. The body odor smell. Which brings our quiz to a close. Let me just tally up the scores. So we've got 7 for me. Yes, round of applause.
Yes, well done.
And your ego. And your ego. Good questions, good win. Well played.
And for the guys, we've got 3 points. Decent effort all around.
So, you've got enjoyable. Records. Like, what was the worst effort we've ever had as, like...
We did one recently where you were on, where, like, it was 7 questions and you got the first 5 wrong, but you brought them back, so you got 2 out of 7.
Okay, so we are nearly the worst today.
Yeah, I think may have been... I may have to reassess my quizzing criteria after this one. But it was enjoyable all the same. Thank you for contributing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And join us after the break, where we're going to go down memory lane and discuss the Euro 96 game between England and Scotland at Wembley. Yeah, so I think this tournament has kind of assumed a very sort of significant role in sort of British popular culture, and sort of very associated with the kind of like cultural kind of optimism of sort of like the second half 90s. And if you look at sort of the England team, they'd had the high of Italia 90, and then after that, they'd had the very terrible performance at Euro 99-2, and then they'd failed to qualify for the World Cup in 99-4. And then, you know, those years have been marked by sort of Peter Taylor's very sort of dreary, like, one-dimensional football and stuff. And Terry Venables was kind of viewed as a different kind of kettle of fish, where he'd managed abroad and tried to be a bit more adventurous and maybe, like, switch up the tactics and stuff. And then... But England came into this tournament having not played a competitive game for 2 years, because they, as hosted it, they qualified automatically. And then this created sort of like different levels of pressure and different like circumstances of not really knowing how good they were. And then I think this kind of story of this tournament begins as such when they go on the tour to Hong Kong beforehand.
What a successful trip.
Yeah, which is just, I think it's just so remarkable. I think it's... Because I think the British press, tabloid press, has a power now, but it's very diminished when you compare it to sort of like these, like this is the years, like 1990s, and then going into the early 2000s with the golden generation, where sort of the British tabloid press, like The Sun, were very aggressive and like would just destroy the team and stuff like that. And when like they'd love like the gossip stories and stuff like this. And then like the... actions of the England team sort of played it. So the story of the tournament kind of begins with the trip to Hong Kong. They play a couple of games, and then you have the incident with the dentist chair. And you want to maybe flesh out, Alex, exactly like why did the English team get in a lot of trouble for their actions in Hong Kong?
Apparently, it already started on the flight to Hong Kong, right? Because there was a struggle between Gaza and the steward. And so they went into fight because I had a little bit too much to drink. And then I think even the captain, the pilot, for some reason saw the backside of Gaza in all of this mess. And then he said that he was about to stop like the flight somewhere over Russia and all of this. So it immediately started kind of in this very messy, messy way. But yeah, then it just escalated from there on. And sorry for interrupting, but yeah.
Well, so I think that kind of leads on to the rest of the tour, to be honest. Yeah, the whole dentist chair incident is with these pictures coming out from, I think, a bar or club. with, I don't know who it was. Was it Sheringham getting alcohol poured into his mouth on this dentist chair?
And also, even though like they'd gone out to celebrate Gascoigne's birthday, but the story kind of ends up being focused around Gascoigne, even though it wasn't like Gascoigne like leading so much, like he wasn't even the one in the picture, right? So the story kind of, I think Gascoigne kind of became this kind of like fulcrum of the British press's like focal point, and like look at these English lads who like just can't handle themselves, and like they're just a mess. And then, you know, there was headlines like disgrace fool as like talking in The Sun, and they described Gascoigne as like a drunk oaf with no pride. And actually, you know, after this, you know, this tour and all this press stuff, there was like, I think there was a poll in one of the British newspapers, and I think like 88 or 89% of the public involved wanted Gascoigne kicked out of the squad. So, you know, there was, the squad had kind of had this instance and stuff, and then they'd got, you know, trying to create kind of like a siege mentality out of it, you know, because like everyone seemed to be seem to be against them, right? And then,
but why? I mean, I don't see it. They haven't played a competitive match in 2 years, and so why? This is a chance for the press to rally behind the team, right? I mean, it's even taking place in England. Why would you do this? Why would you backstep your team like this? I was genuinely surprised when I read this.
I think it's a, you know, it's very much part of the British press culture is to also build people up, and then like it's so much fun to like knock them down, right? So you see them with like Beckham in 98, you know, he's this wonder kid, and then he does like he gets sent off and then like let's destroy him. Or like Wayne Rooney, you know, when Rooney was young and like was in Euro 2004, was amazing and was this amazing, like look at this bright spark and stuff, and then he does something wrong and then like let's tear them apart. Okay. Right,
you so know, you mean Gascon in particular now?
Yeah,
okay, yeah, because yeah, because with the English team there was no big build up, right? Like the build up to the tournament was there, and then, but anyways, yeah,
yeah, because I mean there was like the only like I think the only competitive fixtures that they played in 2 years was this sort of friendly tournament called the Umbro Cup in Japan, and that was
yeah, exactly. And then they won 3-0 against China on this Hong Kong trip, but yeah,
so that's the thing. So at this point in time there's no sport to write about, so that I guess the you know, journalists of tabloids, yeah, they're trying to find a story in the other, you know, goings on.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the tour itself was very underwhelming on the pitch. I think England just laboured to a 1-0 win over Hong Kong's golden select 11.
Yeah. So, which was sort of like,
excuse me, why is it condescending?
Well, as hosts of 96, Euro 96, I think they were hoping for something a bit more emphatic going into the tournament.
Yeah, I think the Hong Kong select 11 had some sort of like some English veterans on the team who were like in their late 30s who were just kind of like there for the
Yeah, it's I mean, it's not even like, yeah, it's the golden select 11 here. We're not talking about Hong Kong's, you know, strongest team in terms of, you know, an organized national team setup.
Okay. But that's how it usually goes, right? Like, you go on these training camps, then you kind of drew a couple of games, and everyone says, we're still preparing for the big tournament. This is all, you know, calculated into our preparation and whatnot. But anyways,
yeah.
So this was kind of the background for then the tournament.
But then also the sort of, let's just say, like, the revelry continues on the flight home. So apparently Gascoigne was asleep, and then somebody, like, slaps him to like wake him up, and he thinks it's Alan Shearer for some reason, didn't it? Even though it doesn't, so he starts trying to fight Alan Shearer, and then a couple of the TVs on the plane get broken as well. But then my favourite bit is like Dennis Wise, who was quite, you know, I'm not sure how his height, but he's very very short. He gets locked in like an air, like in the air
the overhead compartment.
Oh.
Right.
I was wondering, was this like a normal, like a commercial flight, like with other passengers?
Or no, I think it was just
because I was picturing this with like people sitting next to them, just be like, what's going on here?
Yeah, and so then the tournament starts, and in their first game, England, you know, they take the lead against Switzerland, and they do pretty well in the first half, and like everyone's kind of like, let's pumped up and go and stuff, and then they kind of run out of steam in the second half, and are just lucky enough to draw with Switzerland. So then you also again have the kind of unrealistic expectations, and then like they're brought down to earth. So then they have a lot of pressure going into the game against Scotland, because Scotland had, they'd drawn with the Netherlands, isn't that right, Alex?
Yeah, that's right. So there, yeah, a lot of optimism from the Scotland camp going into this game. And so yeah, and of course, you know, you've got the historic rivalry between the two countries that it was going to be treated as a cup final, no matter what the occasion.
Yeah. As a Scottish person, does any game sort of like come close to England versus Scotland? Like, I'm trying to think of who Scotland's second biggest rival would be, but
it's got to be England. Yeah, absolutely. I think just perhaps the kind of the attitude of the English press, perhaps on the Scottish game, it's this kind of this chance to show, you know, England what Scottish football is all about.
Oh, do you mean like the sort of derogatory stuff about Scottish football and Scottish league? And
And I think, yeah, going into this game, the Scottish, yeah, there was this optimism that, you know, Scotland could beat England in their own backyard at their own tournament. And, you know, they'd had a good result against Holland, so why not?
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the Scottish squad back then, it's very strong. Like, you have a lot of players who've playing in the top clubs in England, and also the Scottish League, I think, generally, like Rangers and Celtic, were much closer to competing at the highest level in Europe back then than they would be.
Yeah, you've got some teammates in there as well, you know, across the Scottish and English teams. So you've got, I think, Colin Henry, who just won the Premier League with Blackburn the year before. And he was teammates.
Braveheart. Colin Henry's Twitter profile is Braveheart CH.
He was teammates with Alan Shearer. So, you know, there was a lot of Scottish team were playing down in England. So, yeah, familiar faces to a lot of the English.
Yeah, and Andy Gorham, the goalkeeper, you know, is quite renowned as, I think, Rangers fans voted him for as their best ever goalie. But I think he also has inspired probably my favourite ever football chant, where after reports in the newspaper that he had been diagnosed with a mild form of schizophrenia, the chant went, "There's only two Andy Gorhams, there's only two." Yeah, so then the game starts, and I think the first
time... It's you have the oldest rivalry in football history, and the classic, and the clash of the kick and rush and whatever, and then you watch the first half. And there's nothing.
It's such a letdown.
Absolutely nothing. Nothing to cheer for. No beautiful. No silky smooth pathing. No nothing.
It's very much like play the percentages. Get it into the corners. Like let's pressure. It's very, you know, what you're. I think it reminded me. I was trying to find it before, and then I found him in Italia '90 in the World Cup. In the World Cup there, when England played Ireland, and it was a very sort of what you like this England Scotland game, like a very industrious long ball game. One of the Italian newspapers wrote as a headline, "No football, please, we're British." Which, other than insulting Ireland, I think probably is quite accurately kind of sums up the first half of this game. But also, I mean, before we get into the game, I think we should get, you know, the thing that you were most taken by the game was the sort of age profile of the Scottish players.
Let's get to the important things.
Stuck in my head because, like, yeah, it was quite a professional Scottish team at the time, but also quite matured, but not only in the experience,
yes,
but also in the looks, which was quite surprising to me.
Yeah,
so
they looked like, you know, they just had like the long eyed stare, you know, they'd seen too many, you know, they just coming back from the Somme and just
a little too many drinks.
But I looked up Colin Henry, and he actually like looks younger now than he did in 1996.
He has to. He was an old man when he stepped on that pitch that day.
Because even though he's got like a long full mane of hair, just like the facial structure.
Yeah,
so used.
They were reminding me. We also were reminded of. There's a famous. I think it's like a Panini sticker of David Moyes and David Moyes. Unfortunately, he looks like he's. I don't know. He looks. It's out of a horror film. Just like
Zombie Moyes.
You know, even during his worst days at United, he still looked better than this Panini sticker from his youth.
I think that sums up the first half, though. The fact we were looking up old pictures of David Moyes whilst the game was on.
But also because you're genuinely interested in how these people look so old, even though they're so young, right?
Like, it's fascinating.
It's still puzzling to
me. It brought new depths, you know.
I'll need to do more research on that one.
I think we lost it at the end of the game when Steve Stone came on for England.
Oh, God.
And that's where we were also like guessing the age.
Running. Sorry. Right, we dismissed the tactical analysis and just played a game of guess who, but Steve Stone came on at the tender age of 24 going on 65 or something.
We were all 30 plus with our guesses. Sorry, Steve.
And those are quite conservative still, because I was like, nah, this is not.
It looked like a veterans league. But yeah, Rob, I think you summed it up best when we were watching the highlights to refresh for this podcast, and there wasn't a single highlight from the first half.
Yeah.
It opens with...
The first footage is...
I thought about the same on YouTube. I go, no highlight whatsoever first half. They jump right into the 50th minute.
What I would say to the... actually defend the first half is I'm glad, like, when I was watching, I actually, you know, okay, it was kind of boring football and stuff, but both sides looked pretty evenly matched, you know. And I think what's kind of misleading, especially in this sort of game, if you just watch the highlights, it looks like England dominated. Yeah, you know? I think we were saying this.
2-0 win or something.
We were saying this as we were watching the game. We were like, oh, you know, we're expecting, you know, just to see England, you know, totally dominating the whole game, and you know, not letting, you know, Scotland have a look in, and that's not the case, especially, you know, in the first half.
Yeah, and also,
it's very evenly matched.
You know, especially, you know, in these kind of times where you're used to watching games without any fans, like, the atmosphere does look amazing. Like, it looks like a FA Cup final because it's, you know, proper afternoon sun. And
yeah, I mean, in many respects, at Wembley, in the sun, 3 p.m. kickoff, in many ways it was just like, you know, your average FA Cup final, for instance. Mm.
Yeah, and also, I mean, in the first half, Scotland were very, very, you know, I have in my notes, Scotland love a tackle, and Scotland certainly do love a tackle, because there is a lot of very robust tackling from full-blooded.
Yeah, and Dewey gets the elbow in the face, right? And has this cut, very bloody incident, too. So yeah, it was very physical, the first half. That's
very physical. But then, so at halftime, I think, which changes the game a little bit, but I mean, maybe that's a bit too easy, but so Venables, he takes off Stuart Pearce, and then because they have been playing four at the back, and then they bring on Jamie Redknapp, and Jamie Redknapp sort of just like starts doing, you know, the stuff that you kind of imagine a very like modern sort of DM would do. He just like dictates the play and starts playing like short possession, and like then England start to like assert a bit of dominance, and then they start, you know, they start building a bit of pressure, and then the first goal is really nice, right?
So I think it's Gary Neville, actually.
Yeah.
A fresh-faced, surprisingly. He doesn't look so old in comparison to
his... Gary Neville, Darren Anderton, Jamie Redknapp look young, and then I think that's it.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So it's a nice one down the right channel, and it's kind of a flat ball played in.
Yeah, it's not very much pace, but it's just sort of like, it's like a perfect
lofty,
spot.
Lofty cross. Lofty cross, isn't it?
Yeah, no, but yeah. I mean, it's like he doesn't like whip it in with a lot of pace. He places it in the right area. Mm-hmm. Where,
yeah.
And then Shearer just bangs it in.
Yeah, classic Shearer. And it's 1-0, and I think that really does change the game.
Yeah, because then even after that, so Andy Gore makes a brilliant save. Like, this is a save from from a header where Gascoigne crossed it in, and
Sheringham,
you know, that was like this. Yeah, Sheringham, yeah, exactly. Sheringham heads it, and he makes a, you know, amazing save. And then we saw something which, you know, you don't see very often, a pass back.
Oh, yes.
It's the 61st minute. Gary Neville does a pass back, and England, not England, Scotland fucking up completely because.
Twice.
So, and in between the refs just shouting at players.
Yeah, I can't remember who's shouting at him. It could have been. Was it Adams, maybe? And then he shouts at him and the referee shouts back at him. And so, yeah, so they have an indirect free kick sort of on the byline, on the left-hand side of the box. And they try and take it quickly to sort of like, they chip it to the back post and it doesn't work. But because the referee wasn't ready, they get to go it again. It's like, okay, well, you know, Gary McAllister is not stupid. He's not going to do the same thing again. He tries to chip it to the back post. So.
But don't you, like, it's kind of rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah.
Sometimes you've got to go for the same thing twice.
The double
for mind flames, for mind games.
I do. I'm trying to remember, like, if I've seen many goals from like those indirect free kicks, and I do remember one where Alan Shearer, like, I think it's just like tapped, and Alan Shearer, you know, just with his like extremely powerful shot, just smashes it, and like the guys in the wall are sort of slightly kind of cowering, like, no, I don't really want to get in the way of this, and it's just into the roof, and then I think that's how you take you take the indirect free kick in from the box.
Yeah, this was a very unorthodox approach. Just to scoop it over into the back post.
Yeah, and I think it's Hendry gets a head on it, but it's not really like, it's never really.
Yeah, he's never reaching it. Yeah, yeah. I think the problem was the Scotland players weren't expecting it a second time.
Yeah, the Scotland players had given up on that tactic. Yeah, and then so Scotland do actually. So after the hour mark, they actually get bit back into the game. So I think Dury has a header, which is saved pretty well by Stephen. And I have that. And then, so in the 76th minute, they get the penalty. And so Adams fouls on the right-hand corner of the box. He fouls Dury. And I think it's a pretty clear penalty.
I mean, yeah, Adams looks pretty guilty after it.
Yeah, it doesn't really
contest. I wanted to say, he tries to do the sort of like, innocent face, but it does it so badly. He like sort of wipes his hands in his shorts and he's like, okay, yeah.
Also, no one else joins in, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's when you know.
It's a penalty.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's a clear penalty.
He kind of stops his acting. And yeah. That step. And then apparently, and I watched this like 3 times also after we watched it, I don't see the ball moving. What's the Uri Geller thing about?
Okay, so this... Yeah, oh, we have to go into this, but it's going to take... Okay, so I think the ball... So everyone involved, like, does say the ball moved. So Ali McCoy says the ball moved. I think I've seen McAllister say the ball moved. Other people have said. Other people said they can see it on the footage. We couldn't really see it.
No.
But anyway, so I should tell you what actually happens, and then we can get into your Crevin's bullshit. But okay, so McAllister steps up to take the penalty, and he sort of, like, smashes it pretty much close-ish down the middle... And Seaman sort of like hits it, sort of hits Seaman's elbow and then goes up over the bar, and the chance is missed. Now, I'm just going to read Uri Geller. The
I can't believe that we get into this, and then you've got like your quote ready for this.
A little something I prepared earlier.
Yeah.
So this is Uri Geller, the British Israeli illusionist's perspective. Geller wore an England shirt, clutched a crystal in one hand, and George Cohen's cap from 1966 World Cup final in the other. A few thousand feet up in the air, in a helicopter, he struggled to see the players down on the pitch and only learned about England going 1-0 up through Alan Shearer via radio commentary. Then, as the game entered its closing stages, Gordon Dorey won a penalty for Scotland. Okay, this is a quote from Uri Geller. When I heard Gary McAllister was going for the penalty, I said, "No way! I'm going to move the ball." So when he started running towards the ball, I simply screamed out, 1, 2, 3, move. And lo and behold, the ball moved.
Yeah, him and every other England fan watching that.
Yeah.
McAllister's penalty was saved by David Seaman. And yeah. So, and then what I love about this is that, like, he was, when he brought this to the public attention that it would have in fact been him who had saved England, he was surprised that he got some hate mail from Scotland. So apparently others were less understanding. Once the footage of the ball moving spread, Geller became intensely unpopular in Scotland. I had around 11,000 hate letters. After reading a few of them, I simply refused to open all the envelopes because some of them were really rude.
Oh, sad story.
Yeah, so okay, so the ball moves. McAllister misses the penalty and it goes over the bar, and then immediately England counterattack and Gascoigne scores the, you know, the extremely iconic goal.
I think it was great. Like, I watching the whole game as well, I knew what was coming, so you know, you're sort of waiting for this, you know, massive goal. And I think watching Gascoigne as well, when he's playing, there's a lot of plays where he's trying to play a different kind of football to what the rest of the team are doing. That was the kind of vibe I was getting.
Yeah. It's very clear he's got like a different kind of talent that the rest of them have, and he's kind of like playing his own game. So even though things don't come off, you kind of see where it comes from. But then the goal is
This is where he takes centre stage.
This is what he lays himself up. That's the only solution to this problem.
This conundrum.
Yeah, so he's trying to play this crazy, you know, like different kind of, you know, style of play with the other players. It's not working. So he's like, oh, how can I do this? I'll you know, set this up in this amazing way. This, you know, cheeky lob over the, you know, the final man.
He flicks it over Colin Henry, and then
a lovely volley.
Volleys it into the goal, yeah.
And then it's the iconic celebration where he's on the ground and then they're imitating the dentist chair.
Of course, yeah.
Which is like, becomes like the picture of, I think, like of that Euros, is that him on the ground with the water bottles. And of Scotland thinking they're going to equalise their 2-0 down. And Alex is...
Heartbreaking, absolutely. Well, funnily enough, I was watching an interview with Craig Brown, the Scotland manager, and he says that the Scotland bench, the Scotland coaching staff thought that they were going to be bringing Gascoigne off minutes before he scored that goal, because Gascoigne had been really quiet, had a really quiet game up till then, I think.
Mm.
And they thought this was terrific, you know. England's, you know,
this is our chance.
Yeah, exactly. So a twist of fate. Put that dream
Yeah, so, yeah, and then Gascoigne scores and, you know, it's 2-0. And then, like, the last 50 minutes, there's not really much. That's it. England play out the game. Yeah. And then, so I should also point out that Yuri Geller in recent years has apologised to the nation of Scotland for his role in their demise.
Yeah, it was none of his business, man. Don't meddle with the football. As a magician, I guess.
Was it just this game he was doing it? Or was it how many other games
he should have been like approached by loads of
yeah.
I mean, I watched a YouTube video where he's in his own kitchen and he makes the ball move. So that's proof enough for me.
Yeah, but we don't know his record, right? How many games he's meddled with.
How many balls he's moved.
The game fixing and everything. You can make shitloads of money this way. That man has to be rich. Also, I love how like simple the charm is. Like, I thought you'd come up with something more sophisticated than 1-2-3 move.
Yeah. Would you move?
Yeah, just like anything else. What was the name of the player? Or who said his favorite number is number 3?
Asamoah Gyan.
Asamoah Gyan. Yeah. Maybe he believes in the charm too. Such a powerful number. You always say 1-2-3. Then you do stuff. Uri Geller took this to heart. Yeah. He's like, 1-2-3.
Uri Geller combines. Yeah. So, and then England, so after this game, they go on to hammer Holland 4-1. And even though Scotland win their last game, right? So they beat Switzerland?
Yeah, 1-0. But there's a consolation goal Holland get against England, which ultimately knocked Scotland out with the goals for rule. They were matched in goal difference.
Were they matched? They were matched in goal with Holland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they'd drawn the first game. So yeah.
Yeah, and then so England go on. They in the quarterfinals against Spain, they win a shootout, which you know, for England, it's like, oh, this is a big thing. You know, we've broken the penalty shootout curse. This is our moment.
Wait. If only.
And then 4 days later, against Germany, the curse is reinstated.
Well, what a shootout!
Yeah, you made us watch it after the game.
What a shootout!
It was a quality shoot. Yeah, it was a quality shootout until Gareth Southgate steps up.
Yeah,
and it's a very tame weak effort. His mother said afterwards, "Why didn't you just smash it?" In retrospect,
very harsh critique coming from your mum.
So England go out in the semi-finals against Germany, and Germany go on to beat Czech Republic, who are the sort of surprise team of this tournament in the final. But yeah, and then what I did also find quite interesting, so not to be the, you know, the British press couldn't be, you know, they don't do things on the low level. So in the semi-final against Germany, one of the News of the World, which was edited by Piers Morgan at the time, ran with the headline with Paul Gascoigne in a tin helmet, like a war tin helmet, on the front page with the headline "Achtung, surrender," and they actually had plans to drive a tank to the German team hotel, but the backlash from the initial headline was so strong. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry,
what else to say about this?
Yeah, that's a bit bad. But I think we should finish up with this most amazing Paul Gascoigne anecdote, which I found online, and then
okay.
So this is from his autobiography, and I think this should, you know, I think a printout of this page should be in the Louvre, because I think it is literally art. So I'm going to read it out. Okay. On one of our days off, we went down to the beach to sunbathe. David Platt had joined the squad, more of that later, and ever since we arrived, he hadn't stopped going on about Doug Ellis, the Aston Villa owner and Platty's boss. It was all, Doug Ellis has the biggest yacht. Doug Ellis is going to do this. Doug Ellis is going to do that. Doug Ellis had installed the best pitch. Doug Ellis has flown to the moon. By lunchtime, we'd had a few drinks, although we shouldn't have, and I decided it was time to take the piss. There's a big-ass yacht anchored about 300 yards off the beach, and when I saw it, I shouted, "Oh, look, Dougie and his boat." I just started to swim out to it, and a few of the lads followed, mainly because I said they would probably have loads of drink on board. As we got nearer, I was calling out, "Oh, Dougie, where are you?" Just then a bloke peered over the side. "Hello, Paul. Fuck me, it was Doug Ellis." About 8 of us clambered on board, including Gary Lineker's missus. We must have got through about 30 bottles of champagne and all of his food. It was brilliant. At one point, I leapt on Mrs. Lineker for a laugh, and we both tumbled over the side and into the ocean. Fortunately, she saw the funny side, but I'm not sure Gary did. By the time we had to leave, I was smashed. We were swimming back, and I was about 100 yards from shore when I began to get tired. I decided the best thing to do was take a deep breath, dive to the seabed, give myself a moment to relax, then push up and swim back to as fast as I could. Yeah, I know, not the smartest decision I've made, but I was pissed. As I was coming back up, I must have got turned around, because after resurfacing and swimming hard, I looked up, expecting to see the shore, but discovered I was heading in the wrong direction. I was beginning to struggle, and I panicked a bit. It was quite frightening. I started to wave my hands in the air, and luckily enough, a little dinghy with an outboard motor turned up. It was Gary Lineker with another bloke. "Get in, you daft bastard," he said. When I looked up, it was Nigel Kennedy, the violinist. "Give us a tune then, Nige," I said. "Handel's Water Music," he laughed. I didn't have a clue what he was on about. Alex, Rob, it's been a pleasure to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
Hope you'll join us again soon for more football. Leon, thank you for being on the pod this week.
Yeah, it was a blast. Thank you.
Yeah, before we should finish up, I would just like to mention that friend of the podcast, Paul Watson, from our Pompeii interview, he's doing a fundraiser for Christmas called Kidmas, and they're raising funds and also collecting old kits for kids who may not be getting any Christmas presents this year. So you can go online, and if you have any old football kits around, you can donate to them. They also have a GoFundMe, so you can, if you go to gofundme.com/ Kidmas, you can donate there, and it's a really good thing to get involved with, and we encourage you all to. All right, thank you very much for joining the podcast, and we'll see you again soon.
Bye.
Network.